hopefully everyone is here. Yesterday evening, it was one of the questions I wanted to expand upon, and it's an important question, especially according to the theme of this beginning part of this 9-day retreat, when I'm encouraging everyone to sort of relax, first of all, before you even really get into the meditation, just to be able to allow the mind to settle down, to allow this doer, this controller, to calm down, so that I can get a sense of peace, and thereby energize your mindfulness, until the mindfulness is strong enough that you'll find the meditation on the breath or mental or anything else very easy. And one of the common questions which people ask, and it was asked last night but only in passing, and I never focused on it because I wanted to talk about it this morning, was, how do you let go? And it's one of those questions which is very profound, because it goes to the very heart of the practice of meditation. No matter what teacher you go to learn meditation, you always find the same teaching, just please learn how to let go, let things be, give things up, renounce, surrender, whatever it is. But it's such a difficult thing to understand what letting go truly is. But fortunately, in the teachings of the Buddha, there's one part of those teachings which is again very central to Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths, where the Buddha actually tells you four ways of letting go. And I wanted to start this morning's talk with the four ways of letting go. And then afterwards, towards the end of the talk, I wanted to switch to giving some more detailed instructions on walking meditation. Even though that question time, you've asked questions on walking meditation, I've held back giving those instructions because I wanted you not to sort of do things too much in the beginning, to really relax and rest, and then to start training the mind and have a bit more restraint. But the first few days I just wanted you to relax. And so first part of this talk is about how to let go, and the second part of the talk will be some more instructions on walking meditation. So first of all, like how to let go. It is in the Four Noble Truths, especially as it's explained in the Dhammacakka Sutta, which was the first teaching of the Buddha after his enlightenment. And there the Buddha actually taught about four ways of letting go. And it's a very profound teaching because it really helps understand how we can meditate. And those four ways of letting go are Chaga, Patinisaka, Muti and Alaya. If any of you ever hears the chant of the first sermon, you'll hear those four words as the explanation of the third noble truth. The letting go of craving leads to enlightenment, and the Buddha specifically said these four ways of letting go lead to enlightenment, lead to peace, lead to a sense of freedom. And those four ways, chaka means liberality or generosity, giving. Patinisaka means literally throwing things away. And muti means freedom, and analaya means having what I've called like a non-stick mind. But first of all, the liberality, the generosity, the chaga. And you always know that if anyone, say, gives a donation and they want sort of to be recognized, or they want a plaque put on the wall, or want their names in lights, for example, when we're building our retreat center, if anyone's given a donation, whether it's $1 or $100,000, you will not get any recognition. Your name will not be on a building. You will not be announced that so-and-so gave $100,000, whereas this little guy only gave 10 cents. We don't do things like that, sort of in Buddhism. Because if it is really sort of giving, wanting something back in return, we don't really call that giving at all. That's doing business. And even to the point that I was very pleased in Western Australia, in Australia, when they started getting the laws about tax-deductible donations. Now, obviously, that we had to really look at those laws. And if you give a donation and you want anything, like a plaque on the wall or something, you can't claim tax for it because it's considered to be advertising. Fair enough. I mean, advertising, not your company, your own name. If it's really tax deductible, you have to give it without expecting anything back in return. That's really wonderful, because this is what real generosity is. However, sometimes people, at least they want a thank you, or at least they want something back in return, but that really is not giving. True giving is just giving for the sake of it. You don't expect either acknowledgement, you don't expect recognition, you don't even expect a thank you. You're just doing it because it needs to be done. Now, what that really, how that really relates to meditation is that when you're meditating, when you come here, are you really giving? Are you really letting go? Or do you want something back in return? A lot of times people say, yes, I can let go as long as I get into jhana, as long as I get enlightened, as long as I get a nimitta at least. And when you're doing that, you're doing business. And this is not letting go, this is just another business meditation. I'm going to meditate because I want to be peaceful. I want to meditate because I want to be happy. I want to meditate because I want something back in return. And that is not liberality, it's not real giving. And because it's not real giving, it never leads to anything really worthwhile. However, if you follow the real noble giving of chaga, you give not expecting anything back in return. You can give like a whole hour to meditation. You don't expect anything back. You never get disappointed. You never expected anything. You never complain and ask your money back from this retreat. You just give for the sake of giving. It's a letting go. It's an abandoning of this self which always wants to acquire things. I remember when I was a kid, I used to join the Boy Scouts. And then you used to get these little badges for all these little things which you do, like go camping or lighting a fire or being able to do something. You get all these badges you can put on your uniform. And sometimes people think meditation is like that, getting another badge. And I got the Nimitta badge. And I got the First Jhana badge. I got the Enlightenment, I can see my past lives badge. And those types of attainments, and that is not letting go. And if you want those attainments, they will never come. Some of you, and this is a very, very common problem, some of you actually do get a nice experience. Maybe the last meditation retreat, or maybe 1 year ago, or 5 years ago, it's a beautiful experience. And you can't get it back again. You get your nimittas, you may even get a jhana, you fluke a jhana. And then you know what it's like, but you just cannot get back there. And of course you understand why, because when you're meditating to try and get that experience back again. It's not giving, it's not letting go, it's another business deal. I'm meditating because this is what I want. So when we're meditating, we always have to remember this is really giving. We're giving our body, our mind, our time to this meditation, if you like, just as an act of dana for the Buddha. And we don't care whether we get enlightened or not. We don't care whether we get peaceful or not. We don't care whether we get jhana or whatever. We're just doing this as an act of giving to our great teacher. People who do that, because they don't expect anything in return, because they're not wanting anything, it's an act of giving. There's a sense of selfless letting go. And it's amazing just how powerful that is. If you don't want these things, then because there's no wanting, because you're calm, because you're peaceful, everything comes naturally by itself. So be careful when you're meditating. I didn't know whether you were hiding behind. There's a few people hiding behind the chairs in the back, so I couldn't see who was here and who wasn't here. But you can get the beginning part of the talk on the tape later on. But when you actually give, not expecting anything back in return, we got what we call that the meditation of no expectations, no wanting, of no desires. And you can see now why you have problems in meditation, because very often in meditating we actually want something or we expect something. You should always know whenever you're expecting something to happen, you're never really looking where you are. You're looking, you know, a few minutes in front of yourself. Thinking, oh, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. You lose the present moment, you lose all your calm, you lose all your peace, because you're wanting something else. So, in meditation, there should be no expectations at all. Even the very word, expect, means you're looking. Expect is the Latin word to look. You're looking outside. Instead of being expecting, we should be inspecting all the time. Looking into this moment, into this experience. Never expecting, looking outside of it. But whenever you want something, whenever you're trying to get something, whenever you're not really giving, but you're wanting, then you're expecting, you're outside of the present moment, you're really not letting go. So So first of all, letting go, just giving, expecting nothing back in return. So you're meditating half an hour, you're just giving your time, your body, your mind to this process, you don't expect anything at all. When you don't expect, then it happens. However, you've got to be very careful. Because many times people understand what I'm saying, 99%, not 100%. So they say they're sitting there and they say, I'm going to have no expectations all day today. I'm not going to want anything. And at the end of the day, they come and complain to me interview time. Nothing happened. It didn't work. Okay, you get the message. Because sometimes it's very tricky. You know, we let go in order to get something. So if you're at all disappointed in any meditation, it means you're expecting something. So all disappointment, all frustrations come from wanting, expecting, from doing business when the business fails. So be careful. It takes a lot of mindfulness and a lot of wisdom to be able to meditate, really giving your body and mind, not expecting anything back in return. So sometimes I do that just because, you know, I've been a monk for such a long time. I do have actually faith in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. I have faith in the teachings in the past. And so sometimes I just give because I'm just doing this out of faith. It's my generous act, my dana. Just like, you know, you give donations, you give food, and you give clothing and things to the monks and the nuns. This is what I give to the Buddha, or what you can give to the Buddha. I'm going to give 1 hour to meditation. This is my dana to the Buddha. That's all I want, just the opportunity to give. I don't want anything back. I don't even want a thank you. I just want to give this body of mind to peace, to silence, to the breath, whatever it is. And that's my dana. And I don't expect anything back in return. That's the first way of letting go. It's very, very powerful. The second way of letting go is like throwing things out. That is, I've used a simile before, of like a hot air balloon. Because those of you who have seen hot air balloons or had the good fortune to actually to go up in a hot air balloon, you know you can go so high, but then eventually you can't go any higher because the up thrust is equal to the weight of the balloon. And so if you want to go higher, what you have to do is look inside the basket and throw things out. You know, like the ballast, the bags of sand. The more you throw out, the higher you go. It's the same in meditation. The only reason we can't go high in meditation is because we're always carrying too much baggage, too much ballast. So in our meditation, we just see what we can throw out. You know, we can throw out all these worries about lunch, about breakfast. We can throw out all our worries about who said what to who and the person in the room next door is being noisy, especially when you want to go and have a rest. Throw all that stuff out. And if you throw all those worries out, you can actually go higher. And throw other attachments out, you know, the attachments to your family, to your friends, to your business. Throw all that out as well. And the more you throw out, the higher you go. Whenever you're meditating, you get to a place you can't go any further. Just have a look to see what you're carrying with you. And as soon as you see what you're carrying with you, what's burdening you, what's keeping you down, just throw that away. And then you go higher. You have to throw out the past and future. You have to throw out all these thoughts. And then you go pretty high. But even in this type of meditation, you go so high. And then you can't go any further. And you look inside the basket and you can't see anything else to throw away. There's nothing left in the basket. So how can you go higher? And then you get the marvelous insight. You throw the basket out. So you're just holding on to the ropes of the balloon and you throw the basket out. In this simile, the basket represents your body. You're all basket cases, especially when you get old like me. So you've got to throw the basket out, which means you let go of your body. And with the body, the seeing, the hearing, the smelling, the tasting, and the physical touch as well, you let that go. Because that really stops you going high. And there you are, so just you, holding on to the balloon. And you get so high, and you just can't, you get the nimittas, because the nimittas happen when you throw away the body, when the body usually disappears. But you just can't get into the jhanas. And some of you have those experiences in deep meditation. You've got the nimitta, but you don't know how to go further. There's no basket, what can you throw away next? And the answer is, you throw you away. And once you throw you away, and there's no one hanging on to the balloon goes all the way into the jhana realms. And I think you understand the simile there. The you is your ego and self wanting this and wanting that. There's a wonderful poem in the Visuddhimagga, and some of the Visuddhimagga I think is a little bit strange, but this is actually such a beautiful, accurate poem. It says, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Nibbana is, but not the person who enters it. So, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. In other words, to actually to get into these deep states of mind, to actually to follow that path, you have to vanish and disappear. The traveller, the doer, the walker has to vanish. So you're just sitting there, and you vanish, and the path is very easy then. The more that you try and do the meditation, the more narrow the path is. So sometimes it's like walking on a tightrope doing this meditation, when you are really trying to do it. But the more you disappear, the more it becomes just a wide road. When you really vanish, it's like a multi-lane highway. You can't miss the path, it's just so wide. Path is, but no traveller on it is seen. And even nirvana, or even jhanas you may say, but no person enters them. In other words, you, the ego, the self, the will, has to be left outside. That has to be dropped from the balloon in order to go high. So now you understand what we mean about throwing things away. Wherever you are in meditation, from the beginning, middle, really high up, there's always something more you can throw out. And sometimes that's what it's like. You're meditating, you're not getting anywhere. Instead of trying to get somewhere, just use your wisdom power and see, what am I holding on to? What can I throw out, throw away, eject at this particular time? You know, maybe just you're thinking about your family back home. You know, what your wife is doing, what your husband is doing while you're out here, or what your kids are doing. You know, your husband and wife might be here, and your kids might be having parties for 9 days and wrecking your house. Who knows what they're up to? But don't even think like that. Throw it all away. And those of you who've got shares and wondering what the stock market is doing, I'll throw it all away. So when you throw it all away, you find you do actually go higher in meditation. So again, just like Ajahn Chah said, we're not meditating to try and get things. We're meditating to see how much we can throw away, how much we can eject. And the more we throw away, actually the higher we get. And don't have to worry about throwing all these things away, because you're only just throwing them down on the floor. When you come down again, you can pick them up again. You can go back to your family, go back to your stocks, go back to your whatever else you're going back to. It'll still be there for you. You're just throwing it away for the time being, so you can actually fly high. And that's what we call like throwing away. And the next part of this letting go is my favorite part. It's called freedom. And I won't go through the whole, I probably will go through the whole story, because some of you may not have heard this. That you know that from the early years I came to Perth, I used to go visit prisons and talking prisons. And then later on, you know, when Ajahn Jagro left and I took over as being the abbot, I sort of gave much of that prison visiting to other monks. And one of the monks went to visit one of the high security prisons, Casuarina prison, which took over from the old Fremantle jail. And he'd been teaching there for a few weeks. And then one day the prisoners asked, can you please stay a bit longer? You know, we've prepared some tea for you and some cheese and some chocolate. You know, we want to sort of chat to you if you don't mind, because we only see you when you're teaching meditation. So he agreed to stay a bit longer. So they gave him some tea and they started chatting about all sorts of things. But then they started talking about, what's it like being a monk? And what do you actually do in your monastery? Which is like a very common question. Now, what do the monks and what do the nuns do? So he said, start up straight away, well, we get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And he didn't even need to go further than that before they all drew breath and said, 4 o'clock in the morning! Even in the high security prisons, you don't have to get up at that time. But then he told them, actually, it is optional in Bodhinyana Monastery. You can always get up earlier if you want to. And then what do you do? He said, no, can you watch the early morning news or the end of the late night movie? He said, no, we don't have TVs in Bodhinyana Monastery. So what do you do then? We have to meditate. And they said, well, I suppose so. You're monks, that's what you're supposed to do. But then what happens? You can have a breakfast. So we do have a breakfast. For those of you who visit, it's a very simple breakfast most days, unless there's some sort of birthday happening. And they said, well, they get much more choice of breakfast, in prison. But then what do you do after breakfast? And then, those of you who've been staying in my monastery, you know that we work, we do chores, and sometimes we work really hard. And the prisoners, when they heard how hard that we work sometimes, they all shook their heads and say, they'll never get us to work that hard. It's very soft in Australian jails. But then it says you have your lunch. Yeah, we have a lunch all in the same bowl. And that really disgusted them. Because again, in prison they have these metal trays, you have little compartments for this and compartments for that. You see, sometimes that it really depends. Sometimes actually when I go around the tables in Bodhinyana Monastery, I actually try and separate all the food, but then I have to give it to one of the lay people to take upstairs, and they shake it up and down, and when I open my bowl, it's all over the place. Oh well, never mind. And now it's again disgusted at that, that you can put all this nice food and it gets all mixed up together. But then what do you do after lunch? Can you have a game of soccer or a game of footy? So now we don't play sort of games like that or sports. What do? We meditate. Actually, some of the monks, they have a cup of coffee in the coffee club, as many of you have seen that. But then, meditate in the afternoon. And I said, oh, don't you get bored with meditating all day? Can't you sort of do something else? Like play some music? Can any of the monks play guitar? And actually, quite a few monks can play guitar. We haven't got a guitar. We don't allow it. There's no music in the monastery. That maybe explain some of the chanting, which is off key, because we're not really used to we're not really used to music. We're all tone deaf. But anyway, so then what happens? Well, we hang out till 6 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, we can have a cup of tea together. Only a cup of tea? Don't you have dinner? So no, we don't have dinner or tea. Can't you have any snacks? No, it's just a cup of tea, that's all, or juices or whatever. Well, that's terrible in your monastery. But what do you do in the evening? Come on, let us know. Is there any sex? No, we're good monks. Can you, what do you do? Do you play around or what? So no, we meditate in the evening. Oh God, all meditation. And what time do you go to bed? And the monk said, bed? Most of us sleep on the floor. Wow! Even in prison they give you a cot to sleep in and a nice blanket and a mattress. And that's disgusting in your monastery. And one of the prisoners, I don't know if this is exactly what he said, but this is roughly the idea. And one of the prisoners was actually so surprised at how austere Bodhinyana Monastery is and how harsh it is compared to their prison. But one of them, they forgot completely where they were and said to this monk, that's terrible in your monastery. Why don't you come in here and stay with us instead? And that actually happened. The best jokes in life actually are real experiences, and you can't sort of imagine such things being said, but they invited him to stay in prison. He was much more comfortable. But when he came and told all the monks that, we all laughed. I sort of thought about it afterwards. There's a lot of truth in that. Staying in a monastery is actually more austere than staying in a prison in Australia. So why is it that people want to join a monastery? There's waiting lists for women wanting to come and spend the rains at Bodhinyana Monastery. We're full up, I think, till about 2012. There's a waiting list. But there's a waiting list for people trying to get out of prison. So why? What's the difference? And it doesn't really take much insight to understand that the only difference between Bodhinyana Monastery and a prison is the inmates at Bodhinyana Monastery actually want to be there. And the inmates in a prison don't want to be there. And that's the only difference. And it got me thinking that any place you don't want to be becomes prison. And that opened up a huge amount of understanding about why people suffer. You know, you may be sitting in this meditation retreat. You don't want to be here. You want to go outside for some reason. And then this beautiful place is your prison for you. It'd be the same as Changi Jail or Fremantle Prison. It's a prison for you when you don't want to be here. If you're in a job which you hate, when you go back, your job, your office becomes a prison. Or if you're in a relationship, you know, with a partner and it's not happy, you want to get out. The relationship feels like a prison. If you're in a body which is hurting and aching or sick, your body feels like a prison for you. And if you're in a meditation which you don't like, it's not peaceful enough, it's not going how you think it should, then your meditation, because you don't want to be there, is now a prison. So how do you become free from the prisons of life? You don't have to jump over the walls. You don't have to sort of break through. All you need to do is change attitude. To want to be here. So in your job, relationship, even this retreat, as soon as you want to be here, doesn't matter how austere it is, how painful, how hot or how cold, if you want to be here, then you're free. It's no longer a prison. So, you're meditating, you're sleepy again, and it's the third day already and you've still got lots of sloth and torpor. If you want to be here, you're free. There's no problem anymore. Sometimes, you know, you may just have sloth and torpor. There's a few people here, they've got nimittas, they can't get the jhanas. And they suffer just as much. It doesn't matter how high you are, how low you are, if you want to get higher, you are in prison. And you are suffering. Just like that old simile when I first went to Thailand. You saw people in the village, and most of them were very, very happy. Even they had nothing, they were dirt poor. And they were happier than many of the people I saw sort of in England. But there's always one or two villagers who were sad, upset, getting angry, frustrated. And when I asked, what's the difference between the happy villager and the unhappy villager? Basically it was the villagers who had one water buffalo and were happy with one water buffalo, they were the happy, smiling ones. The some villagers that had one water buffalo, they wanted two water buffaloes. And that's why they were upset and suffering. Just like the person who had $100 million but wanted $200 million. They suffered exactly the same as one water buffalo man wanting two water buffaloes. It doesn't matter how much you have, it's how much you want. That's what creates suffering or happiness. So really here we're talking about in meditation. If you're happy to be where you are, then you always feel free. If you want to be somewhere else, you're in prison. The freedom which the Buddha is talking about, the third way of letting go, it's just wanting to be here, wherever that happens to be. So sometimes we use little mantras to help us. And one of the most powerful mantras, which we've taught here for a long time now, is to say to yourself, this is good enough. This is good enough. This is good enough. You can repeat that to yourself any time during this retreat. This is good enough. What that means is that instead of trying to make something change or get something different, you're really appreciating and valuing what you already have right now. You might have a restless mind. Oh, never mind, this is good enough. And if you make peace with your restless mind, you let it be, you're happy to be here, your restless mind vanishes. Be happy to be here. This is good enough. Again, I mentioned a couple of yesterday or the day before that where we're giving interviews out there in the garden, there's all these leaves and twigs all over the place. And during the interview, one of the people being interviewed reminded me of that wonderful story in Opening the Door of Your Heart of the Zen garden. And I'm going to repeat that story now because it's very apt for this meditation retreat. Any of you have been to Japan? I was in Japan last week. They have amazing gardens. And there must be manicured. Hundreds, thousands of people must be going around those gardens every morning making sure they're absolutely perfect. And apparently, some years ago, there was one garden in Japan which was the best garden in the whole of Japan. It was so famous that people would flock there to get inspired and even enlightened by this amazing garden. And so one day this old monk decided to find out the secret of this most amazing garden in the whole of Japan. So he got there very early. The whole place was locked up. But never mind, he climbed over the wall and hid behind a bush so he could watch what happened. And soon afterwards, he saw this young monk came out. He'd just been meditating, and now he was going to start the first stage of preparing the garden for the visitors in the afternoon. And he saw him come out with two baskets. And as he walked around the garden, he would look at every leaf or twig which had fallen from the tree the night before. There's one big plum tree in the middle of the garden. And he would look at the twig, he would look at the leaf, to see whether it was artistic enough, or beautiful enough, or just the right shape and texture. And if he thought he could use it, he put it in the good basket. And if it was like deformed or wrong colour, he put it in the rubbish basket. He would pick up every twig and leaf and select which ones he could use. It took him hours. And when he finished, he threw all of the rubbish leaves in the compost around the back, and he kept the good leaves, and he went for a cup of tea to calm his mind for the most important part of the gardening work. And after the tea, one by one he took the leaves and the twigs and he placed them in the garden just in the right place. And sometimes he'd look at the twig. It wasn't quite right. He'd stand back and meditate for a minute or two, and then he'd turn it slightly, and it would just be perfect afterwards. And he'd do that with every leaf and twig, and it again took hours. And the result, the effect afterwards, was just an amazing arrangement of colour and shape in this garden. It was like a work of art. And then he would let people come and admire his garden in the afternoon. But this one particular morning, as soon as he'd finished, that's when the old monk came out from behind the bush and said, "I've been watching you all morning, and I must praise you for your effort, your mindfulness, and your care. Your garden is almost perfect." And at that word, almost, the gardening monk's face drained of colour. He went white and his lips started quivering. He said, "Well, what do you mean? Oh, almost perfect." And he fell down to the floor and he bowed to this old monk. "Oh, great master, you've been sent by the Buddha to try and teach me how to make my garden really perfect. Please teach me the secret. Tell me how I can improve my garden. Almost perfect's not good enough. Please show your compassion." And the old monk looked him in the eye with mischief and said, "Do you really want me to teach you how to make your garden perfect?" "Yes, yes, yes, please." "Okay," said the old monk. And the old monk went to the centre of the garden and put his big strong arms around the tree and shook the hell out of it. And leaves and twigs went all over the place. And the poor monk had spent all morning getting all the leaves up and putting them in just the right place. He was terrified. He was so angry. But the old monk looked at that garden and said, "Now that's perfect." I like that old story simply because you've been taking up all of your bad leaves for the last 2 or 3 days and then putting good leaves and twigs in your garden in your mind, trying to make your meditation absolutely perfect. And I want to come along and shake you up and then say, "Okay, now that's perfect." That's what we mean by contentment. This is good enough. Being free. Because really, it is part of nature. Now, you think you're in control of things. You should know by now you ain't. So all these things which happen, they all come by causes and effect. Nothing to do with you. If you're sleepy, it's just cause and effect. You haven't slept enough, or you ate too much, or whatever it is, it's nothing to do with you. Too cold, it's physical problems. You're restless, whatever, it's nothing to do with you. It's all non-self. So isn't it wonderful when you're meditating to say, "This moment is absolutely perfect. With all the mind all over the place, this is perfect." You know what happens when you say things like that, and you really take it on board 100%? your mind becomes perfect. And because it's perfect, you don't want to change it, you don't want to do anything. You stop, you let go. And you become very peaceful as a result. It's amazing how many times people get into deep meditation from the most unlikely of places. Minds all over the place. You say, oh, this is good enough. And wham, bam, then you're in jhanas. Actually, that's really what it's like. It's the attitude of letting go. This is good enough. This is perfect enough. And because there's no complaining, there's no wanting, there's no ill will, absolutely peaceful, accepting, everything becomes still. And actually you find it really is perfect. There's no joke. And you see perfection on a far deeper level, which means you don't have to do anything. You can if you let go. So that's the third way of letting go. This is good enough. This actually is perfect. You are perfect. This stupid mind of mine is perfect. Stupidity is part of its wonderful perfection. If you can really understand that, you start to let go. And the fourth way of letting go is called anālaya. An is a negative. It means no ālaya. And those of you who want to know what ālaya means, you know from even English, himālaya. Himo is snow, ālaya means the abode, the resting place, where it sticks. There's another state in India called Meghalaya. It's the place of the clouds. Megha means clouds. So this is where things rest and settle. And anālaya means you've got no place where anything settles. What I call the Teflon mind. So whatever comes into the mind, it goes straight out again afterwards. Nothing sticks to you. You have a really beautiful meditation this morning and it doesn't stick to you. So you don't expect, I can do it now, I can get a nice meditation again. That stops you getting anywhere. Or you've got a terrible meditation. What you think is terrible meditation, that doesn't stick either. You don't collect any dust of the past. You've got a non-stick mind. Somebody calls you an idiot and you forget about it the next second. Nothing sticks. A mind which is like an empty dustbin. Things come in one end and they go out on the bottom. You've got a big hole in the bottom. It just goes through you, but you don't collect. Nothing sticks to you. Nothing attaches to you. All experience just comes and goes, leaving no residue. The beautiful non-stick mind. It's wonderful when you can do things like that. It doesn't matter what's happened in the past. Good meditation, bad meditation, nothing sticks. So you're free completely of the past. It's amazing sometimes that when you're having difficulty in meditation, in this moment you think, oh, it hasn't worked so far, it hasn't worked so far. It stops you being free because you actually stick to the failures of the past. So you completely let go. It doesn't matter what's happened even a second ago. You completely abandon that. So in this moment, you're absolutely free to do anything. Nothing sticks to you at all. That's called the Teflon mind. So those are the four ways of letting go. Giving, expecting nothing back in return. You can understand why that's called letting go. You're just giving. You don't want anything. You're not acquiring anything. Throwing things out. You're not meditating to acquire things, to get rid of things, to get rid of your attachments, defilements, and all this other stuff which you've been carrying around for too long. This beautiful sense of freedom. Just happy to be here. Doesn't matter where you are. This is good enough. This is perfect. And lastly, having a mind to which nothing sticks. Those are the four ways of letting go described by the Buddha. And now actually you can focus on any one of those during your meditation. And it actually helps you let go more. And when you let go more, you find the result of letting go is peace, stillness, bliss, and insight. All the things which are supposed to come in meditation come when you don't want them. When you're not trying to acquire them. When you're just happy if they come or they don't come. When they never stick. These are the freeing states. You know, of peace and stillness and bliss and insights. They just come naturally. That's why You know, in all these meditations which I've taught, sometimes you meditate and meditate and meditate and meditate and meditate and meditate. But then just one of these times you just hit the nail on the head. You do the right letting, I've called it pushing the letting go button. It's in there somewhere, and sometimes you keep pushing this and pushing that and pushing that until actually sometimes just by luck, eventually, you press the letting go button and at last it works. But just to get you pressing the letting go button once, sometimes that's all my aim. Just to get you once so you understand what letting go truly means. At least you get some experience then. But all these talks about the four ways of letting go, then they all make sense. And you understand how you meditate. What you meditate on is not really that important, but how you meditate, the attitude you bring to meditation, that is so crucial. So those are the four ways of letting go. So keep those as a main part of this retreat. Of letting go, being peaceful, just giving, expecting nothing back in return. This is good enough, because that will really help you enormously. But because we have a great deal of difficulty doing nothing, sometimes, you know, it's almost like giving you a sop, giving you something to do, you know, just so you don't go crazy. So that's why we do like walking meditation or watching the breath. For those people who really understand, you don't even have to watch the breath. The breath will come to you, or you'll be able to do walking meditation once you get the right attitude of letting go. But nevertheless, it's very hard for a person to let go all at once. So it gives people something to do in the meantime while letting go is doing its work. So when you do walking meditation is a great meditation to do, because when you're sitting down you get sore, you get sleepy, and sometimes you get bored out of your skulls if you're sitting down for too long. But at least when you're walking, you're doing some exercise, you're out in the garden, it's very beautiful, very sunny, and it gives you something which can satisfy your doer. Even though not totally, it gives you something to do. So that's why walking meditation is very good. But when you do walking meditation, you try and keep it as simple as possible. So you're not doing too much. Which is why I said you just choose a path. It can now be between two trees outside. If it's you want an end to it and a beginning to it, you can just take one shoe off at one end and another shoe at the other end, so you know which is the beginning, which is the end of your path. Making sure it's comfortable. We don't do walking meditation on broken glass. You know, we're not into the ascetic practices. You know, make it nice and comfortable. That's why sometimes inside is very nice, because it's nice carpet in the corridors, in the room somewhere. We can always find places to do some walking meditation. And you start at one end, get your mindfulness in the present moment. You know, you're walking meditation now, you're not trying to get somewhere, you're trying to be where you already are. Trying to be with every step. Not being at the destination, but being where the action is. So you stay where you are and you feel sort of the feet move. Put as much effort and attention into the moving of the feet as you possibly can. Until quite naturally, you know, after a while, when you start to slow down, just like that walk up the hillside for me at Serpentine, everything starts to feel very beautiful when you start to slow down. Your mind can pick up much more of what's going on, and what you pick up is usually very delightful. So after a while, the feelings in the feet become really interesting. The feet and the legs, this area which does all the moving, where all the muscles are, where the action is. You focus down there, and after a while, you're watching all these amazing muscles, and the feelings in those muscles change. You just do one step. If you want to sort of help yourself along, as I said the other day, you can try and notice what part of the foot moves first of all. And when your foot moves up, what actually part of the foot leaves the ground last? And then when it sort of starts to move, does it go vertically up, or go back a little bit, or forward a little bit? See, how do you step? And then does it go forward in a sort of a horizontal line, or does it go downwards like a plane landing? So you start to investigate all the ways you walk without interfering with the process. So you're not actually making a strange walk. This is not like Monty Python's Funny Walks, Ministry of Funny Walks. Remember that? So you don't try to do funny walks. It's a natural walk. And your job is just to watch it as it happens. And what part of your foot gets to the ground first of all. What lasts? Get to know all the movements of the feet. What you're doing there is always in the moment, and you actually do get quite silent because there are no names for those feelings. Language only goes so far to describe only a portion of what we know as life experience. And there's many experiences which still haven't got a word to describe them yet. And many of the experiences of walking have not got words to describe them. So basically, there's nothing you can say to describe these feelings. So it really shuts you up. You can just know them, you can feel them, but you can't explain them. You can't give them a word. Which is great. It means shuts up, you're experiencing things, you're in the moment, you're focusing on a small area of reality, and you get very peaceful. And because you get very peaceful, it's usually the case, but not always, you start to slow down. And your walk gets naturally quite slow. The reason is because there's too much going on to go fast. You're not forcing it to be slow because you're trying to prove something. It just naturally happens. And because most times when you get focused and concentrated, you do go slow. That's why it is not recommended to do walking meditation in the local park or out in public. As the following story sort of tells you, this was from our monastery in England when it first started. I think it was about 3 or 4 or 5 years before Bodhinyana started. So it's about 30 years old now. And Ajahn Sumedho wanted to get a meditation retreat and do a weekend retreat at least. But it's so hard to get premises. But fortunately, there was a local psychiatrist who managed to buy this big mansion, because it was actually, it subsided. It was, I think, a dry period or a wet period. And many of the floors had sunk. So she got this big mansion with some stables very cheap. And it was a wonderful place to have a retreat for about 20, 30 people. So they could, some people could sit in the stables, could sleep in the stables, they were okay, they took all the hay and the muck out. And there was a nice big room where they could meditate, and there was a big garden for walking meditation. Now remember, this was an English village. And in those English villages, everybody knows everything about everybody. And certainly all the people in that village knew that the woman who owned this mansion was a psychiatrist, a clinical psychiatrist, who worked at the local mental hospital. Now you're getting the message here. So on a Saturday morning, the neighbours saw all these zombies lifting up their feet and moving forward and putting it down. And they actually, it's a true story according to Ajahn Sumedho, one of the neighbours called the police. And the police car came up to round up all the meditators to take them home where they thought they belonged. It took a lot of explaining that these weren't patients from the mental clinic who had come home for the weekend. They were Buddhists. That's why it's a good idea not to do this in public. Otherwise you might get taken away. But it's great here because you can walk as slowly, be as weird as you like, because, it's surrounded by the fences. And, probably the Catholics know us by now, we're a bit strange, so they give us a lot of free rein. So you can do your slow walking. And it gets really nice. Some of you can't get into deep meditation through sitting meditation. Sometimes walking meditation becomes your great path. And I always remember just when I first became a monk over in Bangkok. It was a very noisy monastery in the middle of Bangkok. But every morning we used to do some morning chanting, and afterwards I'd do a walking meditation for an hour at least. And in the main hall. And the hall must have been about maybe 18 meters long, 20 meters at most. And it used to take me half an hour to get from one end to the other and half an hour to get back again. And I wasn't trying to prove anything. I was doing it by myself. It just was so much going on in your feet and you got so focused. On this one occasion, I'd actually forgotten that I was supposed to go out to a dana, one of these little ceremonial meal offerings. And so I was busy just, so totally focused, just watching my feet rise very peaceful in my own world. And I noticed there was someone like shouting at me from like 1,000 miles away. Ajahn Brahm, you've got to come to Adana. It was like a monk right next to me. But because you're really focused, it was like they were thousands of miles away. And it was really weird, because when you hear something like this, when you're really focused in some sort of samadhi, you can't really react. It was, wow, this is interesting. And then he shouted even louder, Brahma Wangsa, come for Adana. And then you understood, yeah, that's right. And then I remembered I had to sort of turn around to speak to him. But I couldn't turn around fast. I was trying my hardest to turn around. And it took me a couple of minutes, I mean literally 2 minutes. I'm not talking about 60 seconds, 120 seconds, to turn my head around. I was going as fast as I possibly could. I was really trying to push it for him. And when, I'll just go quickly. When I actually saw him, I said, pardon? It was like you were so cool and so still. You couldn't move fast. You just couldn't go up the gears quick enough. You must have thought I was crazy. And that's actually what it was like when you get into deep meditation, in walking meditation. You get so still and so peaceful, having a wonderful time. And sometimes, because the mind is opening up, you're washing the grass or the carpet. Like happened to me once in Thailand, I was just on the concrete floor, I was doing walking meditation, getting really into it, getting nice and peaceful and calm. And oh, it was just so nice. And then, wow, look at that. I was looking at a piece of concrete. It turned into a work of art. All the different greys and whites, and just the way they were arranged, just in a little square of concrete. It was exquisite. I just couldn't move from it. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. This is what happens when you really get into deep meditation. Everything becomes, you see, so much more, so deep into it. It's just very, very, very beautiful. When you get into deep meditation during this retreat, it's amazing just how much beauty you can see and how fascinating everything becomes. It's like, remember once, you went to the toilet and afterwards you looked at the bowl and said, wow, look at that! The different colours of brown and the texture. I never seen anything so beautiful before. It was just, you just couldn't flush it away. That'd be too destructive. How can you destroy an important piece of art? So that's what happens. You're not going crazy on that, it's just the mind opens up. So when you do walking meditation, that's sometimes what you see. You start to see whatever's on the ground becomes incredibly beautiful. You see a bark on a tree, and you just can hold that for a long time and explore it, and you see so much which is really interesting. So walking meditation opens your mind that way. So this part of the retreat is great to do, lots of walking meditation. But don't go thinking about what you're supposed to be doing. Remember doing the letting go. You're doing it just for the sake of doing it, not expecting anything back in return. You know, you're seeing how many things you can throw away. You know, you're trying to be just happy to be here in this moment with this part of the foot moving. This is good enough. This is perfect for you. And nothing is sticking. Whatever happened a moment ago doesn't stick with you. So you're right in this moment, just letting go. And as you're walking, you're feeling all these amazing feelings. And the mind gets so happy that it starts to see things it's never noticed before. When there's a feeling in the feet. Oh, so I should have said, usually put your gaze about 2 meters in front of you. You don't need to get a tape measure, 2 meters, 1.9, 2.1, whatever, something around that area in front of you. So you can actually see that there's nothing which is going to injure you. And so you can stop before you get to the tree. And sometimes if you do stop and something really happens and you feel something very beautiful, stop and enjoy it. And it's amazing when you start to get some of the joy from the meditation practice. The mind gets so still and so peaceful. It sees perfection in so many ways and in so many areas where you never thought you'd see perfection before. And that gives you some of the great insights in how to take this meditation further. The beauty is right here in this moment. You have it already. You just need to stop and allow it to grow. And then you see it all. So those are the two little pieces of instruction this morning on how to let go, and a little bit about walking meditation. You can walk meditation anywhere. However, if you do feel you need to go fast, then go fast. It's not a race to see how slow you can go or how fast you can go. You don't get in the Guinness Book of Records by the slowest walking meditation ever. You just go at a natural pace, and sometimes you feel you need to go fast, sometimes you need to go slow. So let's just see what happens. Okay, so any questions about the letting go this morning or the walking meditation? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's good enough, yes. So, I want to be here, I choose to be here. Whatever, as long as you'd actually come here. And are here. How do you get here? No. that's good enough. So, and again, it's great that you sort of, you don't just follow instructions just like some automaton, some robot. You know, you understand these things which are being said, you interpret them, you play around with them, you experiment, until you actually find out what they really mean. So don't expect you, like, because we haven't got a strict schedule, you're not supposed to follow all the orders, you know, like, Hail Ajahn Brahm. This is not anything like that. This is where you listen to these things, you find out what they mean, and then you do it in your own way. So you've got a good amount of freedom here to experiment, to play, and find out what works for you and how it works. So please do that. Okay, so now we have the meditation, walking meditation, sitting meditation, or sleeping meditation if you're still tired. Remember, be content to be wherever you are. This is good enough. See perfection in the moment. This is walking meditation. And for those of you who have the interviews, you see the list on the board. I think this morning it was supposed to be starting off with Sister Fatima, Sister Sari, Hasapanya, Jackie, followed by Dulmanti, Lee, Kim, Leslie Ann, Cheng, Hui. I think, Kim, you already crossed your name out. If you're not coming, could you please cross your name, put a cross next to the name. Put a cross next to the name. There's a pen on the next to the sheet of paper, so I know you're not going to be coming. And if there is quite a few people cross their names out, then the ones coming afterwards, you know you can come a bit earlier. So that means that I'm not hanging out for too long there waiting for nobody. So you can actually put your time up for 10 minutes for every person who's crossed their name out before you. Okay, so happy meditating. You don't want to come. Ah, is it something I said? Okay.